The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Pataka Swami on May 28, 1984 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 8, Verse 6 through 7.
My Lord, you are the best of the Brahmanas, especially because you are fully aware of the Jyoti Shastra, the astrological science. Therefore, you are naturally the spiritual master of every human being. This being so, since you have kindly come to my house, kindly execute the reformatory activities for my two sons. Translation with repetition. My Lord, you are the best of the Brahmanas.
You are the best of the Brahmanas.
Especially because you are fully aware.
Especially because you are fully aware.
Of the Jyoti Shastra, the astrological science.
Of the Jyoti Shastra, the astrological science.
Therefore, you are naturally the spiritual master.
Therefore, you are naturally the spiritual master.
Of every human being.
Of every human being.
This being so,
this being so,
since you have kindly come to my house,
since you have kindly come to my house,
kindly
execute
the reformatory activities,
the reformatory activities
for my two sons,
for my two sons.
Purport of Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 4:13. The four varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra, must be present in society. The Brahmanas are required for the guidance of the whole society. If there is no such institution as Varnashram Dharma, and if human society has no such guide as the Brahmana, human society will be hellish. In Kali Yuga, especially at the present moment, there is no such thing as a real Brahmana. Therefore, society is in a chaotic condition. Formerly, there were qualified Brahmanas, but at present, although there are certainly persons who think themselves Brahmanas, they actually have no ability to guide society. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore very much eager to reintroduce the Varnashram society into human society so that those who are bewildered or less intelligent will be able to take guidance from qualified Brahmanas. Brahmana means Vaishnava. After one becomes a Brahmana, the next stage of development in human society is to become a Vaishnava. People, in general, must be guided to the destination or goal of life. And therefore, they must understand Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole system of Vedic knowledge is based on this principle. But people have lost the clue, Nate vidu swarta gatinhi Vishnu, and they are simply pursuing sense gratification with the risk of gliding down to a lower grade of life, mrityu samsara vartmani. It doesn't matter whether one is born a Brahmana or not. No one is born a Brahmana. Everyone is born a Sudra, but by the guidance of a Brahmana and by samskara, one can become Dvija, twice born, and then gradually become a Brahmana. Brahmanism is not a system meant to create a monopoly for a particular class of men. Everyone should be educated so as to become a Brahmana. At least there must be an opportunity to allow everyone to attain the destination of life. regardless of whether one is born in a Brahmana family, a Kshatriya family, or a Sudra family. One may be guided by a proper Brahmana and be promoted to the highest platform of being a Vaishnava. Thus, the Krishna consciousness movement affords an opportunity to develop the right destiny for human society. Nanda Maharaja took advantage of the opportunity of Gargamuni's presence by requesting him to perform the necessary reformatory activities for his sons to guide them toward the destination of life. Thus end the Bhakti Vedanta purports of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 7, the chapter entitled Lord Krishna Shows the Universal Form. So, today, in society, there is an emergency situation. So the bottom line for a civilization to be considered civilized is that they should at least follow Varnashram system. And of course, the perfection of civilization is when they're actually God-conscious completely. Well, for both of these purposes, Brahmanas are essential. A Brahmana is both someone who practices very pure, sattvic living standard, and who is always engaged in instructing others. In this way, the Brahmanas, they're moving independent from the other material activities of the society simply for the welfare of the people at large. Actually, yesterday on the radio show, somebody asked a question, something about you dependent upon society, if it wasn't for the hardworking people, where would you be, or something like that. I never got a chance to answer that. MC commentator, he ended the show at that time. Actually, the Brahmana, they have a right to not work. They have a right to beg or to get their income from the people directly, because they're fulfilling a service to the society in general. They're providing spiritual education. They're providing opportunity for people to become God conscious. Of course, Srila Prabhupada never liked the idea of simply asking for something and giving nothing in return. Therefore, he always wanted us, he preferred, if when we ask for something, or if we can give something back, which would be beneficial to that person. And this way, people would not consider that they're not getting anything from what they're giving. Or, at least, the society in general would get back more than whatever they gave, because they're giving something material. And they're getting back something which is priceless, which is beyond value calculation, something which is spiritual, which is eternal. So Prabhupada, he started this program of book distribution. In India especially, people have taken advantage by begging. They don't give anything, they just take. You know, it's not unusual to find a man and his wife wearing saffron in Bengal, chanting door to door and begging for money. First of all, nobody should wear saffron unless they are in the renounced three orders of life, the three austere orders, or whatever you would call it. I guess everyone's austere, but brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he made a little jingle which described this. Golai mala nakir tilak. Piche ase sundar bala, sab khuli chela. Little tilak on his nose, and beads on his neck, tilak on his nose. He's walking along, but behind him his wife goes. Little his girlfriend goes. This is actually sundar bala. these all followers of Kali Yuga, that Lord Chaitanya, he never discouraged anyone from being a grihastha, from being a brahmana, from being whatever they were and presenting themselves as that. But he was definitely against someone presenting himself to be something that he was not. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur began this tradition that where he wanted to show something. He didn't want to be misunderstood. So Prabhupada, he put that into practice by encouraging us to give out transcendental literature, prasadam, to be visibly providing the services for the people. He said that the Krishna conscious devotees should be known as the most upright, honest people in society, as providing the spiritual service for society. That was his actual intention. That's what he wanted. Because how can a preacher preach if the people don't have respect or faith in him? Garga Muni came, he was immediately accepted by Nanda Maharaj. He was renowned. He was an expert in Brahminical sciences. Therefore, whatever he said, they would accept it as something very authoritative, and they would try to live by his instruction. This type of a faith is necessary for a preacher to have a good effect. How can you preach to someone and have full effectiveness if the person at every thought, every word is thinking whether this person is a cheater or not, whether this person is trying to rip me off or not? One has to establish a relationship of faith where the person is able to put confidence in the person who's preaching to him. That is ideal. That is actually where we want to go to. So Srila Prabhupada said the solution is that people should read our books. And of course we should have a good standard of behavior. Another point here, of course, when the brahmanas, often they would know the astrological science. So when they came, people would ask them, actually, what's my future? What's the situation hold for me? Then, well, by astrological calculations, they could give them some advice. You're this kind of person, and this is your situation. And that would also help that person. Then actually they would give advice on how to make their life more Krishna conscious, more God conscious at the same time. But it was a good avenue to attract the people. People naturally were very interested. They were interested to know about their future. So immediately gave something to discuss. So once you're talking about a person, then they start to open up, and then they would also tell them how to apply this into their life. Because the brahmana was actually a well-wisher, because he didn't have a high overhead by nature, brahmana was very simple, was very truthful, austere, religious, clean. So the brahmana was it's not a big burden on society at all, because he lived very simply. Even when Chanakya Pandit was offered to be the prime minister of the entire empire of northern India, about, was it Chandragupta, was 2,000-3,000 years ago. At that time, he refused to live in a palace. He was provided as a prime minister, you could have a big palace. He refused it. He said, no, as a brahmana, I don't want to live in your palace or any other palace. I want to live in a grass hut. So outside of the palace compound, he constructed a grass hut, and he lived there. And he wouldn't take any salary. He said, I want to be a paid man. I'm working voluntarily. If I get any donation, I may accept it. This was the nature of Brahminical culture, not to be dependent. As soon as you're dependent upon someone, just like the politicians, they're trying to satisfy the people. Even the Kshatriya wasn't supposed to be dependent. He was supposed to... It's not a popular thing. You're supposed to follow the advice of the scriptures and the brahmanas. Naturally, the people would be satisfied because society would be well organized and people would have enough food, shelter, clothing, and spiritual facility. So when the Brahminical culture broke down and Brahmanas started to consider themselves an elite caste, and they started to envy the other, then from there, the Kshatriyas became more selfish and greedy without proper guidance from Brahminical culture. In this way, the whole Vedic culture basically fell apart. Didn't completely fall apart, but it started to disintegrate to the extent that all of no emperor was powerful enough to maintain the entire India as one empire. There was many small kings and several, two or three emperors. And so the Mughals or the Persians and Arabian hordes, they were able to run over Western India first, and they were able to conquer large parts of Northern India initially, although South India was able to keep them out for a long time. Finally, about 400 years ago, they made inroads into South India. And then the British came, but South India and Orissa practically, except for parts of Northern Orissa, most of Orissa was never under Mohammedan rule, was never under British rule until later. Similarly, sometimes people criticize, well, Maharaj Pratap Rudra was a Vaishnav. This is somehow this weakens a monarch or weakens a person. But Pratap Rudra was more effective in keeping out the Mohammedans. From Orissa, the Mughal, the Badshahs were trying to attack him. Then practically speaking, he was never conquered. He may not have been an aggressor, he didn't go out and conquer vast areas of new land at that period of time, but he didn't give up any land. He was very effective. And similarly, Orissa was. And the other Vaishnav king who built Tirupati temple, who was in South India, Krishna Deva Rai, he was also the time of Lord Chaitanya. His was, there were travelers from Portugal and Italy who have independently recorded visiting his kingdom. And the descriptions they gave were incredible, fantastic. How opulent it was. All the sub-kings would give one-third of their taxes to the emperor. That was the system. And they would give a fixed number of soldiers and military things every year. And the emperor, therefore, he had a bigger army, and if the kings had their own army, but if they couldn't handle any crises, the emperor would come and support. This was the system. So his kingdom, Krishna Deva Rai kingdom, went to the whole total South India, under Pradesh. His capital was in Hampi, right down to the tip, right up to Godavari, right up to Ramananda Rai. And from Ramananda Rai up was Pratapa Rudra. So during the time of Lord Chaitanya, these Vaishnava kings, they were able to protect themselves very effectively. And they had... So that's not a valid criticism. It's when people become corrupt, when they become overly materialistic, or if they become impersonalistic, that's when they become, they want to give everything up and they want to fade away to the Brahman. So that's when they start to become less useful for fulfilling their duty. So the actual need, of course, is people to be assigned their responsibility. What is the whole Varnashram system? Is that according to a person's work, he should act in a particular way. There's already people who are teachers, administrators, businessmen, and laborers. But the Varnashram system gives with each category certain inherent responsibilities. For instance, a teacher is also supposed to have an impeccable character. Recently in the newspaper, it gave how one high school teacher, I forget where it was, how he was accused of having relationships with his students of both sexes. And there was some special somewhere, a child abused. And many of the school teachers, they have abused their position in this way. This is the whole problem. You have a school teacher, he's one of the natural leaders of society. It says the king, the parent, the school teacher, the politician, the parents, and the school teacher, these are natural leaders of society, because school teachers, they're going to train the children, they're going to create the future citizens of a country. So teachers, teaching is one of the duties of a brahmana. So he is supposed to have an impeccable character. He's supposed to be almost like a spiritual master in one sense. He is a spiritual man. At least he's their master in terms of teaching master, and he should be spiritually and materially impeccable in his character. Similarly, a politician, he also is supposed to have certain rules. A country is supposed to act in a certain way. This is very scientifically made so that they know what is their duty to society, and so that they act in such a way that they actually fulfill their duties. If someone is an administrator, he's supposed to be fearless. He's supposed to be courageous. He's supposed to be able to go out. Just like in Mayapa, we were attacked. Here were the policemen. We brought them. We said kindly that the one devotee lived outside at a house. He's a grihasta, lived down about a half a mile. When he saw that we were attacked, he went to get the police. He said, kindly, I'll take my bicycle. We won't go by bicycle. They walked. When they got near the temple, the battle was still going on. They all had rifles. He said, all right, you should go. They said, wait, let it cool down. We don't want to risk our lives. They're not Kshatriya, they're Sudras. A Kshatriya, they're not run away from a battle. They're not considering. They're not cowards. So this is a problem. You have policemen, or you have politicians who take position, but they should have the quality of being ready to then sacrifice their life for the cause of the nation, for the cause of fulfilling their duty. If their only purpose is to fatten their pockets, then what is it? So this type of system, that if a person has a particular occupational duty, he should also have certain qualities, and he should act with certain responsibilities. Otherwise, even though he's doing that occupation, he won't be perfecting it. The society will be disorderly. And that's exactly what's happening today. Even we have these categories of people, because the teachers don't have a high character, because the political leaders don't have that type of courage in many cases, or that type of integrity. Even they're allowed to take remuneration for what they do, but then they should also protect the citizens who are helpless without the administration taking the active role as the protector. Similarly, the businessmen, they have a duty to provide economic strength for the entire society. They're considered the stomach. If the Vaishya, the businessmen, are able to create a very strong economic base, then their society is very strong. But if they create the chambers of commerce and then think how to manipulate the market so the prices go up artificially, and the people are therefore, they may become wealthy, but in fact the people become artificially weakened. It's not a proper balance. Better they're to work under certain system, but that can only happen if the administration and the brahmanas are strong. So in this way, the checks and balances are there if everybody fulfills. That depends on strong spiritual guides. So actually, this Krishna conscious movement is there especially to train up brahmanas. We are having the shaved hair and the sikhas and them, because this is the natural insignia of Brahmana. Yesterday after the program, one Indian was there. He's a Banerjee is Banopadhyaya, one of the more aristocratic Brahminical families of India. He said, you are all the real Brahmanas. We are a name Brahmana, but we are not able to do much. But you are actually the Brahmanas. And this you'll hear in many places. Of course, there are some very bigoted kind of caste Brahmanas who don't want to accept anyone who's not a born Brahmana. But in general, the modern Brahmanas of the day, they kind of see that what Krishna consciousness is doing, they don't have to put the words in their mouth. They will spontaneously say, you are practicing Brahminical culture. Because a Vaishnava is spontaneously, automatically a Brahmana. The next stage from Brahmana is Vaishnava. So what our temples are factories for producing and training Brahmana. What is a Brahmana? Brahmana means that he's thinking, especially a Vaishnava, is someone who is Boradukaduki. He's considering how to help this misled society. How to help the people who are suffering in illusion to regain their natural position as devotees of Krishna. Even other people, they may remain in their position as businessmen or laborers, but the brahmanas, they're there to train them up how to lead their life, just like Garga Muni is, but he's going to tell Nanda Maharaj so many things. Of course, Nanda Maharaj is already trained up, but today people are completely in illusion. That's why we have a high standard which we have to maintain in our time. We are Brahmanas. But Prabhupada said, I've done half the work, the next half is Varnashram. That means to train up the rest of society to act in their particular occupational duties in devotional service. Contributing service to Krishna according to their capabilities. And of course, we have to go on recruiting more people to be Brahmana. Sometimes we hear someone say, I've worked for the Krishna conscious movement for 7 years, what have I got? That person is not a Brahmana at all. The Brahmana is not trying to get anything. He's trying to serve. That is why a Brahmana can take a donation and it doesn't have any karma, because the Brahmana won't keep it for himself. Immediately he gives it to the Krishna and then uses it for uplifting others. He uses it to build a temple for people's spiritual youth, for purchasing books, to purchase books, to give books to people who are interested in reading the books, for other type, for distributing prasada, for building a Krishna conscious farm, to protect the cows and to provide a shelter for people to come who are not able to live in the city or not ideally suited for living in the city, but who can practice God consciousness in that type of a natural situation. So that is what we want. We want the favor of Krishna. We want people that are social workers. I was, the first time I went to Thailand with Rupanuga Prabhu and Balabanta, they went there, they wanted to start a program for distributing prasadam to the Cambodian refugees. So when we went there, we found that they were already late. They thought they had they were months late. There were literally 50 volunteer organizations there of every country, name, shape, Oxfam, Refam, whatever, CEDA, UNICEF, Caritas, CARE, just flooded. They begged and they approached us. The people who were the welfare workers said, please have prasad distribution for us. We can't stand this place. We're completely bored. The food here stinks. If you open up a prasadam restaurant, we'll be very happy. They all go there, they're there for 3-4 months. They get bored stiff after the first week. And they're just waiting to go back home. When they go back, then they're heroes. They've serve the camp. But you know, when they're there, their people are miserable. I mean, you can see that here the devotees, when they're distributing prasadam, doing arathyatra, distributing books, when they're doing preaching, they're blissful. They're ecstatic because they're doing it, knowing it, and directly is pleasing to Krishna. And they have that developed, that brahminical culture where they actually have compassion to help others. Here they have a sentiment when they actually get there and they see the sick people, and they do it, but they're just unhappy. The whole night they want to have their parties, and it's just like some kind of it's very strange combination. They have a touch of goodness in them, but because of their not being trained out in brahminical culture, it's very unnatural for them to maintain that kind of an attitude for more than a couple of weeks. They have to mix it with a lot of sense gratification, and there's no sense gratification on the Cambodian border. And therefore they want to go back to Bangkok or something. It's an unusual situation. They want to go back to where they came from pretty fast. So this is what is actually needed. A person cannot be an effective preacher without developing this brahminical standard. Therefore, immediately we have to follow four regular principles, chant Hare Krishna every day, study the literatures, know what we are giving the people, and be actively engaged in giving out the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. That is the actual pure Brahmana Vaishnava activity. When somebody falls down from the brahminical stand, then they can think, what am I doing this for? And if somebody is in the brahminical attitude, if they're actually understanding what is the purpose of life, and they want to help others to achieve that purpose of life, then they don't have to look anywhere else for their satisfaction. That itself is the most fulfilling thing. Especially when one is awakened to pure devotional service, and one is understanding this is the desire of Lord Chaitanya. This is actually what he wants. Then one can experience the highest ecstasies of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada explained, we're not to imitate Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya, he sat around and talked about Krishna, Leela, with his intimate associates. He was enjoying those pastimes of Krishna, relishing them. But he is Krishna. That's his position. But we are the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. Our position is to serve the Lord's idea. We're the servants of the servants of the servants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya wanted that the fallen people would be given the opportunity to taste that nectar of life to become God conscious. So all of the associates, after Lord Chaitanya left, they were all actively engaged in different kinds of activities, writing literatures or distributing literatures. Narottam Das Thakur, he wrote a poem, four-liner, where, I can't remember the Bengali right now, or the Sanskrit, but he basically said that Lord Chaitanya has varieties of energies. Some of those energies are engaged in writing transcendental literatures. And other energies are engaged in distributing them, like Srinivasacharya. And he mentioned writing like Rupa and Sanat. So the six Goswamis, they wrote transcendental literatures, which even to this day, and which for the next thousands, millenniums, they are going to be the standard of pure devotional service. And similarly, Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda Pandit, other, they took those literatures and they distributed them, they preached on them, they established their authority that Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this is the proper understanding of the purpose of the Bhagavatam. This is where the Bhagavatam is leading one. This is the method how to practice in this Kali Yuga, Krishna consciousness. But everyone is a team. Everyone living in the temple is a part of this brahminical team to disseminate Krishna consciousness to the society at large. when people are going out distributing books and someone else is cooking for them, it's not that that person is not engaged in the preaching activity. He's part of the team, and actually that attitude should be adopted by everyone. This is our purpose. It's for giving out Krishna consciousness to society at large. If they're having difficulty in assuming that, then sometime maybe they should go on Harinam or go on some activity just to see how the people in the world are needing this Krishna consciousness and to get in that attitude. But everyone should feel a part of that preaching mission. There's a special idea of having these temples and having the communities is for disseminating Krishna consciousness to the people at large. So no one should ever doubt what is the purpose. That the purpose of the activities is for disseminating. That is our actual game. That is what we want to take as our pay. Because Srila Prabhupada, he said, if we give Krishna consciousness, and if our purpose is to please Krishna, then that means we go to Krishna. But if we have some other purpose, then Krishna may give us that, he may fulfill that particular desire, but then we don't get Krishna. Somebody wants some material thing in exchange for this devotional service, foolish. In one sense, of course you can get it, Krishna will give. One should still do devotional service, no doubt. It said, akamo sarva kamo va moksha kamo dharaditi brena bhakti jogena jadeka purushan param. But it's like Robert made the example, if you go to a multi-millionaire and you're sitting in his office, he says, I can, all right, what do you want? And if you ask him, give me some ashes from your ashtray, what is the use of it? You can get that anywhere. If you're going to go to the trouble of approaching someone big, at least then you can ask something significant. Like in India, the big multimillionaires, they are not approached to donate a bag of rice. They're cultivated and they're approached to give some significant contribution for building a temple or for doing something. One Mr. Birla came to visit our temple. At the same time, the secretary of the Communist Party of India was there. And one of the biggest newspaper reporters also showed up. So he saw that the biggest industrialist is here. Down the hall is the biggest communist. And they're both staying in the same Hare Krishna guest house in Mayapur. So then he asked the communist, well, what are you doing here? Here the capitalists are here. They said, no, this is a place for everyone. It's a place of the people. That's all right. Then he went to the capitalist and said, what are you doing here? And he said, I said, no, it's the place of God. Very nice atmosphere we come here to. So then when Mr. Birla got back home, he sent a thank you note that I liked your temple very much, like the activities. Here's a small token of my appreciation, a 25,000 rupee donation. Nothing for him. he knew we're going to be visiting him anyway, so. But that kind of a mail-in donation, it shows the sincere appreciation, and that's the kind of thing that that's what a Vaishya should do. But this is the type of cultivation. The people in general, they can appreciate, oh, here's something which is being done. So the point was that if we have any desire for material, then we take it like that. Yeah, that was the point. The rich, we ask him for ashes, what's the use? A person like that, even without asking, he can give you 25,000. Even without asking, what to speak, if you ask him, there are people who have, can contribute in dollars. Easily they can contribute $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 at a time. But it takes years of cultivation sometimes before they have that amount of faith. It's not that the first time they come, we sign them up and then they'll give you $5. Sure. But in any case, if you're going to ask him for something, what's the use of asking him for something insignificant? If you're going to ask for something, then ask for something which is suitable to their capacity. So when you're serving Krishna, why ask him for something material? Which you can get anywhere. You can even get it just, you know, with a little material karma, what to speak of. Get from Krishna what he really has to offer. That is his eternal devotional service. That is the actual gain. That's what it means to be a Brahmana Vaishnava, is to understand what is the actual goal of life. Aham Brahmasmi is Brahmana. I am not this body, I am spirit soul. I'm a part of Brahman. And a Vaishnava means Jivera Sarup Hoy Nitya Krishna Das. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Ram. One question?
Generally, the people in India, are they fooled by these charlatan sannyasis and renunciates?
The cheaters and the cheaters.
But they threw out Rajneesh.
He wasn't offering them anything but something they didn't want. They have some morality in India. He was just immoral. I mean, at least, you know, the normal sadhus offer, well, if you touch my feet or worship or they give some, then you can have a big family or you can have a lot of material facility, you can do whatever, you know, we'll do whatever you want type of thing. But then Rajneesh was actively promoting some immoral activities. It's just, it's too much. Orgies and stuff in the name of some kind of this. Yeah.
How is it that Orissa, which had a strong, you know, history of Vaishnava kings, and the Muslims have been conquered now so far, like Gujarat, which was conquered Muslims, not so rich?
Because the Orissans gave the biggest, the hardest time to the English to take over. They were like the last to go. And even after the British took over, the Orissans, they just don't like to do control. I don't know who tied this knot here, but he could undo it because it's not convenient for playing. So the British purposely didn't develop Orissa. They kept the people really down. There's no industry there. Zero industry. There's But they developed big cotton mills and everything. They developed Gujarat, tobacco, cotton. So because of that, plus the Orissans are good Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. I don't know, you know, how developed their Vaishyas are. But the Rajasthani and the Gujaratis, Vaishyas are very, they're very developed. Bengal and Orissa, Brahmanas are famous all over India. But their Vaishyas are not like super famous. I mean, they have, of all of them, the Suvarnabhonaks are the most together Vaishyas of Bengal. And they got Sahus, but I mean, they're all right. I mean, but they're not proven to be as effective a Vaishya as the Marwari Vaishyas. Agarwala as these these Gujaratis, pretty industrious people. I mean, they've gone all over the world and they're very effective. Sindhis have shown some pretty good acumen on one level. So right now the world is economic competition, but they were kept back by the British. Everyone knows that the British were. That was the British's thing. If you cooperate with us, we'll cooperate with you. And the Orissans didn't cooperate, so the Bengalis did, so we had to be careful in Calcutta.
His point was that the Mughals, how did they penetrate Gujarat being so religious invasion?
That wasn't his question.
They said that the Kshatriyas, when they died in battle, they were going to heaven.
Yeah.
Fighting against it.
is that these Kshatriyas, you know, everybody thinks they're right. So when they can't, everyone told them they weren't right, but they were considering that they were right, and they had reasons which weren't right. But so then the only way it could be decided was by going to war, but they were going and fighting according to the principles of the Vedas. So that's different than a thief robbing in the night and then you kill the thief and he's fighting with you and he dies. That's not kshatriya. But following this religious principle, you have a dispute, you think you're right, they think you're right, they think they're right, and then, so who's to say exactly who's right? You know, ultimately the brahmanas, they give their opinion, but you know, it gets political. So in some cases if they're following that, my understanding is that if they're following the Vedic system and they're fighting according to the Vedic rules, and if they die in that type of, or you know, they die in a battle like that, that was considered enough. If they run away and they get shot in the back or something, they're not going to. So if they die face forward in the battle.
People ask that sometimes because of
well, they're not going to get liberation. I mean, there's certainly a material consciousness, but that's a type of piety. I mean, that kind of an integrity that the demigods can appreciate to some extent. Of course, there are mleshas, javanas, kalkulas. So, I mean, this is especially applied for kshatriyas. But whether it applies for everyone in a battle, whether it applies for javanas in a battle, a mleshas in a battle.
Well, that's in the 12th chapter.
Does it mention that anywhere?
Yeah, it mentions that one can't even do, you know, if you think, if he has a concept like that his country is God and he works in that direction, then Krishna will accept. Is this, you know, Krishna says, if you can't surrender to me and work for me, and in the purport's there, about 12:7. Rather describes that even that social work with the selfless dedication that will gradually advance one to become to know what.
The point is that the country sees that he's doing his duty to God. That this is his duty. This duty is a law which is handed down by God. So that even in their dying like that, although it definitely has some material motivation, but there's also a connection with Krishna. So, definitely they're going to get more glorious by dying in the battle for God and their country. They're going to get a better reaction. Because the point is that even if they commit so many sinful activities, that itself is purifying. I mean, they've given their life, just like a man gets hung. Then he gets to go to Swarga, to heavenly planet, after getting hung. Even he's a murderer, because he's considered absolved. He gets his karmas wiped out for that. I don't know how high up he goes, but I mean he gets absolved from that karma. So similarly, if a person is dying in a battle like that, so that's purifying. But I know that Krishna, he didn't want to fight with the javanas. Kala javana came, he didn't want to fight. The more that they're God-conscious, they'll get a benefit. It's the best way for someone like that to go.
I heard the radio show was very, very nice. My lowly opinion, it sounded like you were going in like a needle and coming out like a house. Because at the beginning, it sounded very timid, you know, this is some Swami from India, Mayapur, and then as it went along, the points became bigger, and it seemed to be very effective like that. But also, I noticed that the commentary, Joe Kalata, whatever his name is, you can see the importance of like you're speaking of, what are we giving Prabhupada's books? See, important because he presented himself as having studied some Oriental philosophy, some Indian philosophy, but every word out of his mouth was impersonalism. And without Prabhupada's books, that's what is happening to everybody. Prabhupada's books in the office, I read so many books before I came here, all impersonal, everyone.
Yes, he was talking Zen Buddhism or something. Yeah. Giving up your ego,
the
nothingness or something. It seemed too big a subject to really. I mean, I don't know how much time I have.
Latika Bhakti? Prabhupada told one devotee that whose father owned a factory that he should make his factory Krishna conscious, have tapes playing, programs. So the point is, especially the brahmanas would be following all of the principles, and we would try to get everyone to follow all the principles, at least as many as possible. And yes, people would take up the different occupations. Definitely there would be an army, there would be everything. But this way it's essential that we have a qualified brahmanas, people who know the philosophy, who can dissolve the people's doubts. Of course, if the whole world becomes Krishna conscious, then you still need an army just to keep out the thieves and rogues, but there's always going to be some rogues, there's always going to be some antisocial elements. You're going to need a police force and an army in this world. Even in Swarga, they have their army. Even the heavenly planets, they have an army, so what to speak of here? But obviously, it wouldn't be, it would be less, it wouldn't be overdone to the extent that it is today if there's no conflict. It was the one when I was leaving the radio show where the person after me was a school teacher, Glenn something. He said, well, if everybody had one idea, and he said, if people were like this, Joe Collado said, if people were like this, then there'd be no wars in the world. He said, well, if anybody had one idea, there'd be no war. That was his intellectual adjustment. That was the thing, is that there's some places you can get islands. You can make it your own country. But then if you do that, then the danger is, you see, then if you're your own country, then who protects you? There's pirates. In those places, there's pirates, and they'll just come and rob you. And they have the arms and cannons and bazookas and all kinds of stuff. So if you're your own country, that means that there's, you know, then you got to have your army, you got to have your defense, you have to have everything. So that's why a lot of these small countries are like called protectorates. They're under, you know, bigger, like Britain or England or America or something. Bhutan has got a defense agreement with India. So if you have a country, you got to have an army, at least to defend yourself from violence. If you don't, then you just like open prey that people come and take. Yes.
Can the devotees preach in outer space?
Some people are there, we've heard. Some of the devotees are there. I heard someone said some devotee was spaced out. Let's do first things first. We're worrying about outer space. We haven't even got the inner space yet. There, if a person really wants to, you know, if preaching a civilized society is too difficult, well, then there's also, there's a lot of tribal people in the world. That's where the Christians go, in India, different places. The Pope just visited New Guinea and they made a big inroads preaching to the Aborigines and headhunters there. The Megamal Christian there carried a big cross. It was a big thing. It's fairly easy to preach to those people. Of course, maybe Christianity is easier because they just get them to stop eating human flesh, but they can eat everything else. And you want to get them to be vegetarian. But I mean, there's other, you know, not so far gone tribals. And they're very simple people. You can preach to them. And many people think that they're in outer space. In the future, we'll go to other planets, no doubt. I don't know about the space in between them. There are, of course, different levels in between where, like, yakshas and others live. So we could go and preach there also. But normally to do that, you have to have a body which is suitable for those environments. So since right now Krishna has given us a body here which is suitable for this environment, and this body only lasts 60, 70 years, 80 years anyway, so we should make the best use of this bargain and preach here, and then subsequently in our next birth we'll have opportunity to, if we have a keen desire to preach in other places, we could take birth there and be able to preach there. Some liberated souls, they revert back to Krishna and then preach again other places. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.